A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on September 17, 1995, entitled, Imagine That. The scripture readings are Psalm 78, verses 1 through 8, and Matthew 20, verses 1 through 16. The texts for the sermon are Psalm 78, verse 2, and Matthew 20, verse 16. Copyright Grand Valley State University.
A year ago, about now, some of us were in France. We landed in Paris and went outside the city to Giverny, to the gardens of Monet. Monet's gardens are wonderful to visit. We stood on the bridge that's so famous in his paintings, and we tried to find all the angles from which the famous paintings were made of those marvelous gardens. And as is Nancy's custom, she was snapping pictures all the time. And we have a book with Monet's gardens. And it reminds us of a wonderful time, a wonderful visit in that spectacular place that has become world famous through the eyes and the painting of this artist, Claude Monet. Last weekend, we went to Chicago to see the exhibition, the largest ever mounted, of Monet's paintings at the Chicago Art Institute. And we saw what we had seen in person, but we saw it now through the eyes of the artist. And we saw through the eyes of the artist what we had in photographs in our book. But there is no comparison between seeing it, taking a photograph of it, and seeing the painting through the eyes, the imagination of the artist. I don't think you can visit that exhibition without having moments at which you're simply deeply moved. Because as someone has said, a photograph tells you what's there. And that's good, Ed. That's good. But a painting tells you what is there, what it really means. A painting goes beneath the surface because an artist is a person gifted with being able to see through. The difference between a photograph of a familiar face, precious as that is, and a portrait of that same face, which is not literally accurate, but allows the soul to come through. Because finally, reality is not something out there that we examine and probe and then describe with language. Reality is that which is pictured in our imagination. And we're finding in this century that the imagination is the human faculty where revelation occurs. That it is in our imagination that the world, that reality comes to us in pictures, in models, or in the familiar word today, in paradigms. We don't know the world one little piece by another, something that's objectively out there, but we seem to take it in a moment. We might say, it dawned upon me, or the light went on. In this century, in the last couple of hundred years, the natural sciences have been the models of truth and of reflection of what is real. But the natural sciences today, those who practice the sciences, tell us that it is not the case that little by little they get pieces and then string them together, but much rather, suddenly, something makes sense. A pattern arises a model takes shape. I was reading of one mathematician who was working on one of these unsolvable problems, and he was at an impasse. He had been working at it for a year or two, and others had been working also. And he took a trip. He was in some city on another continent, and walking down the street, suddenly he had the answer. And I would have quickly found a scrap of paper to write it down, but he didn't even write it down. He knew it in a moment. It suddenly came to him. Now, that didn't come without his research, without his hard work, without his endeavor. But nonetheless, finally, truth is a gift, and it dawns upon us. And it is in our imagination that we get configurations of the whole that begin to make sense of our lives, of human existence, of reality. The imagination is a great, great gift. Jesus knew that, and so Jesus didn't argue about God or about salvation or forgiveness. Jesus did not get into those kinds of rational discussions which I get into. Jesus told stories. I'm not going to exposit the parable of the vineyard this morning, part of which I read a moment ago. But if you had been there, if you had gotten the point, you would have been offended. I'm surprised they didn't lynch Jesus when he told that story. Think of all the decent, hardworking, responsible citizens for whom Jesus literally turned the world on his head. Isn't it important to start at 6 in the morning and to work hard all day for an agreed-on contract? Work offered, payment received, that's the way the world works. And that's the way the world would like to work with God. Jesus didn't argue the point, he just told a story. And the owner of the vineyard said, look, those of you that got up at 6 o'clock in the morning when all decent people go off to work, we had a contract. I fulfilled the contract. So what's your gripe? Do you begrudge my generosity? Jesus is saying, don't try to put God in your little human box with all of its self-righteousness and all of its competency and all of its rules and regulations. Jesus sets the world on his head. He tells stories. You hear that story. You may not like it. I bet you don't like it. Do you like it? I bet you don't like it. I don't like it. Jesus says, can you imagine a different kind of world? Can you imagine a different kind of reality? That's why at the lower level right now, the children are being told stories. Stories out of this storybook. This is a book of stories, paradigms of grace. Human encounters with God. People who said, oh, I see, and wrote it down. And so we mine this storybook and we tell the stories because Jesus was just faithful to his Jewish tradition. The psalmist, Psalm 78, said, I will speak to you in parables. And literally that word in the Hebrew means a story with a meaning. And he goes on to charge Judah with a responsibility to tell the stories to the children and the children's children and to the generation yet unborn, that they may in turn tell their children. Now we're down, what, 4 or 5 generations? The unbroken link of the chain. We keep telling the stories. Why? In order that way down the line, our children's children, children may set their hope in God. Keep the story alive. Keep the rumor of angels alive. Keep the visitations of grace alive. Tell the stories. But it's not just for children anymore. Isn't that really what we're all about? Robert Coles, the psychiatrist who's done so much research on children and children's stories, tells about after some research coming back to Harvard and telling Anna Freud, Sigmund's daughter, about the research, and at one point she looked at him and smiled and she said, "It sounds like there's not only the research you're doing with the children, but there's something going on within yourself also. Are you working on your own inner stuff?" And he had to admit that he was. And I thought to myself as I read that, isn't it true of us all? Aren't we all the time, trying to come to terms with a mystery? The mystery of God, the mystery of life. What does it mean? Whence have we come? Whither are we going? Those deep and ultimate questions. We don't have objective answers out there, but we keep on hearing the stories that have shaped us, and then we run head on into experience. And experience jars us and jolts us. And someone tells us a story, perhaps, that puts the lie to that pattern that we had all figured out. And then pretty soon there's all kinds of extraneous stuff out here that doesn't quite fit in that neat configuration that we've arranged as to how things really are. And then, out of the chaos, through the struggle, suddenly, it's not that anymore, but it's this, or it's this. And suddenly, focus returns, but it's such a much bigger picture now because it takes in so much more. And that's really, I think, the journey that we are on together as a people. That's really what Christ community is all about. If there's that which marks us, it is to the extent that I have a hand in it. I don't try to take that pattern you've got nicely shaped by which you're operating and shore it up. I try to rattle it a bit, even disperse it, so that the pieces will go in desperate areas and come together in a larger pattern, because I believe that that's the nature of human existence. We are in history, and life is dynamic, and we move. You say, "Ah, shucks. Do I have to?" Well, no, you don't have to. I was talking with a young lady this week, and I'm going to marry her. I mean, perform a marriage. Charming young lady, and she's going to be moving to England, and the company she works for, Plastic Injection Molding Company, wants her to represent them over in Europe. And she said, "My goodness, I'm not an engineer." They said, "You go and charm the engineer, and then put the engineer in front of a screen, and by way of satellite, they can talk to our engineer in Grand Rapids, engineer to engineer, face to face, voice to voice, diagram to diagram, data to data. You don't have to know anything about engineering. Go sell plastic injection molding in Europe." Well, you see, I'd rather write my letters longhand and mail them by boat. And you can do that. But the world will pass you on. But there's really a deeper reason why I hope that you'll keep open, imagining, wondering. And that is because you'll be so much happier, so much fuller, so much more energetic, joyful. Do something for me just a minute. You ever had your blood drawn? You know what they do. Clench your fist, right? Do it a minute. Just do it. Go ahead. What are you feeling? Tight muscle. A lot of tension. and some exertion to keep that fist clenched. Ready? It's going to poke you now. Just take a moment. Won't hurt for long. Now open your hand. Just kind of let it droop. This is getting something all neatly put together. And then holding on with dear life, plowing through life like a bulldozer, hoping that you can die before you have to change it. And that takes energy, folks, and tension. And it'll rob you of the joy of life. This moves. It's relaxed. It's flexible. This will allow you to imagine a whole nother thing, a different world, another possibility. The imagination is a human faculty. That's where the Spirit of God connects with us. The imagination impacts our health and our well-being, and it opens to us constantly new vistas. Wonderful. Wonderful. This morning, in the dimness of the dawn, there were heavy cloud banks over the lake. The water was dark. And then the sun came up just over the horizon in my back, I suppose, with its beams almost horizontal. And suddenly, a little sailboat cruised across my window, and the beams of the sun caught the sail, and it was like the sail was lighted, like it was aflame. In the dimness, the foreboding sky, in the dark sea, there, that white sail, illumined, marvelous. And I thought, oh, what Monet or Jack Brouwer could do with that. And then I began to imagine Christ's community. That frail little bark in the dimness of the human experience. And I said, oh God, catch our sails with light and enable us to radiate light into the dimness of the world that is dawning. Can you imagine that?